Introducing
Real Estate People.
Hey, where are the bills?
What are you talking about, Willis?
We're the Real Estate People.
I am super excited about this episode today because one of my favorite people in the real estate industry is joining us today on this episode.
Yeah, it's true. And a lot of people, they mistake me for you.
Really?
Yeah, they do.
That's not a bad thing, I guess.
We kind of look like we could be brothers.
Yeah, you're like my older brother.
Yeah.
My Eric Matthews to the Corey Matthews.
We always
denim
fight about
jacket,
this.
Am I older than you?
By a couple months, yeah.
What's your birthday?
July 21st, 86.
Shit. April.
Yeah. So 3 months.
April, July. You're older.
He's the oldest.
But we grew up with the same music and the same, like in the same area. We even know some of the same people. That's been kind of fun.
Yeah.
You guys should like just date or something.
Listen, the bromance.
Listen, I'm in a committed 10-year relationship. Yeah.
Both married with kids.
Two women. Yeah.
Yes. And sometimes we show up with the same outfit on, which makes it even better.
Well, when
I almost wore my green pants today.
When the team outfit is normally just black and or white, like it's pretty easy to match everybody in their room. I think 4 out of 5 days of the week, me and Nick have the same thing on.
I love when like someone walks in, they're in all black, and we're like, "Yo, thanks for being in the attire today." Yeah. But so this is episode 7.
Yeah,
we talked a little bit to you, Ryan, before jumping on here about the message of this is to help people who are thinking of buying a home to like really understand the process, to break it down and, you know, the different segments or components of the process. So that when someone's thinking like, oh my God, we're pregnant, we're going to have another baby, we need a new house, something bigger. You know, that daunting feeling of buying a house is not as scary, right? Because when you take this giant process and break it down into components, it's easier to understand. So that's what we're doing today. And today we're talking about deposit. Mm-hmm. So the stuff that happens before the deposit, the home inspection, the attorney approval, picking your agent, all that fun stuff. Go back and listen to the previous episodes if you haven't heard them. But today we're talking deposit. Next episode, we're talking closing. If you listen to all 8 episodes, you are going to be in a better position on your next real estate purchase.
Yeah, and you get a gold star. I don't know if anyone's going to listen to all 8 as a first-time home buyer, but I like that we separated it. So that if there's one thing that somebody knows about, they don't necessarily have to go through that. They can pick the episode that they want to listen to and get educated on. And the goal, too, is to share these episodes with your clients. If you're a real estate professional or a lawyer or a lender, and there is an episode that's beneficial to one of your clients, we wanted these to be a resource for anyone in the field.
And then buying a house doesn't seem like this big, daunting task. I've sold a lot of houses to like younger, when I say younger, I mean like 25 to 22 to 27. And after the process, they've said so many times, this was way easier than I ever thought. Because as a younger person, you think buying a house is this whole big scary experience that only your parents did. But when you use us, work with an agent on the Geomber team, we guide you through the process, we make it seamless, and it's evident in our clients. So they appreciate how seamless we make the process.
Yeah, I mean, and whether you use the Geomber team or another team, it's all about that first episode that we did, vetting your agent. You want to make sure you vibe with them. You want to make sure that they have experience and that there's trust there too. I actually got it. That was vet, right? Vibe, yeah.
experience, trust.
Trust.
Nice.
Take your dogs to the vet.
I like that.
All right, so you've gone through the inspection process. You got the whole rundown of everything going on in the house. You're able to decide what to do from there. Do I just take it as is? Do I negotiate with the seller and figure out who's going to fix the things that need to be fixed? Or do I walk? But in this episode, we're talking, you have either negotiated with the seller and there's some kind of remedy that's agreed upon of what you're going to do, or you've accepted as is and you're moving forward in the transaction. And the next step is where you put some serious skin in the game. This is where
your agent's going to say, yo, give me $10,000 per the contract for deposit. What does that mean?
Right. Right.
That's what we're going to talk about today. I think the first thing to really dive into before we get too deep on like the amount and how and why is the difference between the deposit and the down payment. Because so often when I'm talking to people who are buying, they were like, oh, my, I'm putting 20% down. My deposit's 20%. Your down payment for your loan and the deposit you submit during the contract process are two different things.
And we established that pretty early in the deal, because when drafting a contract, one of the items we fill in is how much is your deposit amount? And that's usually when we tell the buyer what the deposit is, a good faith deposit. This ties you to the deal. It's not due today. It's due after the home inspection. So they already have, they've been preluded to what the deposit is. But now when you're asking for that check, most likely explaining it again, explaining where it goes, what happens.
How to write it, who to give it to, and why, which we're going to dive into all that. But it's different than the down payment. You determine the deposit amount while signing the contract. And then after your home inspection, you have 2 days per that contract to submit your deposit to the escrow agent that is also identified in the contract that you should also, it should also be understood while signing the contract who's holding this deposit. Let's talk about how much the deposit should be.
Well, did we actually cover what the difference between down payment and deposit like specifically is? So down payment is for your loan with your lender, and the deposit is a good faith payment that's held in escrow until closing. And those funds are used for the closing costs and any other fees associated. It's also a way to show the seller that you're serious about buying the house. You're putting some skin in the game. You're saying, I'm willing to have this money held until we close, which a lot of times is 2 months.
So it's like, I'm going to give you 200 grand for your house. It's going to be contingent on my attorney approving it. It's going to be contingent on me doing a home inspection. And after we do the home inspection and agree upon the results, I'm going to give you $10,000 in deposit, which is going to now, that really substantiates the deal, right? There's been a transfer of money, AKA there's something on the line. So that 10 grand is going to then go sit in this deposit account. That's typically the listing agent's office who holds the escrow. And then as a buyer, when you get down to that finish line where it's time to close, if your loan is 20% down and your closing costs are another 10 grand, you have to bring $50,000 to that closing. And if you have 10,000 in deposit, you're only bringing an additional 40,000 to closing.
Right. So you want to talk amounts and...
Now, how much... Yeah, because a lot of buyers ask when filling out a contract, how much should I put down for a deposit? So I always like to tell them, like most sellers are going to be most concerned about price first. How much is any buyer willing to pay me for my house? What's the gross price? And then beyond price, the next thing a seller... What's going to be most important to a seller is, how are you financing this? Is this cash? Is this a conventional loan? Or is this some other type of financing? Beyond the financing, is the buyer doing an inspection? And then after the inspection, if all of those other terms are identical, the next thing a seller is going to consider is, how much is each buyer putting down in deposit? Because that money ties them to that deal then. If the buyer doesn't act in good faith towards the closing process, then they could potentially lose that deposit money. So it's you say this all the time, it's like a security deposit for the seller that the buyer is going to act in good faith while continuing to pursue the financing and the closing on.
Yeah, if somebody's offering on a house and they have a pre-approval, or they show that they have, you know, money in the bank to pay for the deal, but they're not willing to, like, the other big part of the transaction is the closing costs. A lot of times, like, 20 grand or more, you know? And so if they're not willing to put a little bit of money towards that, how do you know it's going to be there when you close? You could get the deal financed, but if you don't have your closing costs, then the deal falls apart. And so it just, it gives the seller peace of mind, knowing that that money is there for when the time is needed, that it's needed.
So in competitive situations, we encourage buyers to put as much money in or down as a deposit for that deal, because it's something that the seller is going to consider, that this buyer is willing to put 20 grand down with the contract.
Yep.
Or only 5 grand down. So what's their level of commitment to closing on that transaction that everyone's agreed to?
Mm-hmm.
And normally, like, Ryan, on like a $100,000 house, what are you $100,000 house that someone's going to live in? It's not an investment. Yeah. What do you typically see as a deposit?
So $100,000, usually you're seeing $5,000, maybe $10,000. And I think what you're honing in on is called the good faith deposit. The more money the buyer puts down for a deposit, that's holding them in the game. If they only have $1,000 and things get sticky, like towards the end, if they can walk away from the deal and only lose $1,000, they might do that. But if they have a $10,000 deposit, then you're thinking about $10,000. So good faith deposit, and it's kind of like leverage that the seller is going to have to keep you motivated, keep you in good faith to close the transaction.
$200,000. What's a typical deposit?
Probably $10,000, I would recommend to my clients.
$300,000.
Is there a percentage?
10 to 15.
He's saying it right now, 5%.
Yeah. Well, you don't want to go too high, because then, God forbid, something happens, gets sticky in the end, and you have a $50,000 deposit. That's a nice chunk of money that...
Someone's going to sue for 50 grand.
Yeah, nobody's suing for five. Yeah.
So if you only have $5,000 in deposit, right? It costs 20 grand to sue somebody. Who's paying a lawyer $20,000 to come get that 5 grand? I'll answer this for everybody. It's nobody. Yeah. Well, nobody that understands this, like money, which you should understand if you're buying a house. So, but $5,000 is the limit in small claims court. So then you can still go get that 5 grand from small claims court without hiring a lawyer. But if there's $50,000 on the line, lawyers are going to encourage people to sue to get that money if the seller feels the buyer is not acting in good faith, or the buyer is like, yo, you didn't disclose that this basement flooded, and at the final walkthrough, there's 2 feet of water in this basement. Like, how are we handling this? If you have 50 grand on the line, that means a lot more than just putting 5,000 down. And that's how this ties into the whole equation about contractual value when submitting someone an offer and deciding what you're going to offer them as a deposit. That makes sense.
I'm sorry if you've already went over this, but can you just go over like acting in good faith? Like what exactly do you mean by that? Like, I feel like that might be a dumb question.
But. No, it's a good question.
It's often referred to as the good faith deposit. So if the buyer is doing everything they should be doing with their lender to move through that finance contingency, then they're acting in good faith. Now, if the buyer for some reason just has a change of heart, doesn't want to buy the house, they don't have a contingency to get out of the deal, and they spend all of their money or move all of their money out of their bank accounts to not qualify for the loan, that could be seen by a judge as bad faith.
You're not doing what you said you're going to do.
And now that would come down to the line if it ever ended up in the judicial system where someone is making a decision on if someone was acting in good faith or not and who should get that deposit because of their ignorance or negligence or whatever.
Yeah, say a better house comes on the market after a buyer submits his deposit and they want to go after the better house. You're not acting in good faith if you're willing just to kill the deal. You know, that's not good faith. So that's why that higher number ties into your motivation to close and like how much you've already put down on that house that kind of keeps you to it, holds you to it.
Yeah, it's like you made an investment in buying this house. Put $1,000 down, you might be more likely to look for something else or
kinda... say, fuck you, sue me.
So here's an example.
What are you going to do, right? I'm not closing and I have $1,000 and it doesn't mean shit to me.
So yesterday I received an offer on a property. It was a very low offer. We're asking $400 for the property, received an offer of $290, but their deposit amount was $290. That's the whole thing. What? So that means, yeah, crazy. So say we accepted that deal. Now they're giving us all the money for the deal and we're holding that until closing. Chances that buyer making it to the finish line is probably 100%. They're not going to play around and risk losing $290,000. So it comes into play when you're looking at these offers and seeing how much we're going to be able to hold these people to the deal.
Well, dang. Was it enough? Like $110,000 below the asking price to get the deal done?
No, we respectfully declined. We couldn't give them a counter because it's just too low, but that's a good strategy. They put down $290,000 deposit. That's dedication to the deal.
$110,000 below
the price. Have you ever seen that?
No.
Somebody putting the whole purchase amount in the deposit?
It's wild. I've seen 50, 100, but never the full boat.
Is that to like kind of negotiate to be like take this?
That's to say like we're here, we're real buyers, we're going to give you all the money up front, you know?
Yeah. We have the money, like we're closing.
Right. Yeah.
It's all in deposit already. Just finish the legal work and we'll close on it.
Wow. So if you're that buyer listening, get that price up and we can do a deal.
Yeah. It's not enough though, yeah. $290. But the deposit's an important part of the deal. Mm-hmm. It's like it's the transfer of money. Do you know what I mean? Without that transfer of money, it's just a sheet of paper. And then the person that holds that deposit is the escrow agent, which is typically the listing agent's brokerage, but that sometimes is negotiated on, but it's spelled out in the contract who holds that deposit. And now escrow agents are held to law about when they can release that deposit to people. As the escrow agent, you can't release that deposit to anybody unless both parties sign off on how it's getting distributed if the deal doesn't close.
So just to make sure I'm clear too, the seller's agent is under a brokerage because every agent has to hang their license with a brokerage. For us, it's Keller Williams. There's lots out there. That brokerage works with the bank, and that's the bank that that money is held in.
Yep, which is identified on the contract that Keller Williams Realty, who banks at M&T Bank, is holding this $10,000 deposit to be submitted by the buyer. And then Keller Williams cannot release that escrow to any party if the deal doesn't close unless both parties agree to how that deposit gets distributed. And if you don't agree on it, then it's a lot of limbo, right? And it's not a good situation to be in for anybody.
Hmm. We had Amanda on an earlier episode. Would she be the individual who would be responsible for handling that deposit as a loan officer?
No, it has nothing to do with her.
It's a mortgage.
She does. She gets the mortgage.
Yeah, it's agreed upon in the contract who's holding it. And it's typically the listing brokerage. But sometimes it could be the seller's lawyer, the buyer's lawyer, the buyer's brokerage. But typically it's held by the listing broker. And the reason why that's done, and I don't think a lot of people know this, is that's where the commission money gets paid from. So if Keller Williams is holding $20,000 in deposit and the commission on that deal is $12,000, then they just use that deposit money to distribute the commission. But it's all represented on the closing statement that's to be drafted by the lawyers prior to this closing of the deal.
Mm-hmm. We're going to get into that a little bit on our next episode, the actual closing. So how do you submit the deposit check? Who writes the check? Where does it get dropped off? Like, is it mailed?
Can I bring
is it,
cash?
Yeah, is it cash? Yeah. Like, can I Venmo you or what?
Typically done through Venmo. No, it's it could be a certified check directly from the bank. It could be a personal check. You don't have to go to the bank and get certified funds. It could be wired in, which is what we try to have done now so that we're not don't have our clients' checks in the mail. Yeah. You know, just wire the money. Yes, there's a fee, but you know, even if it's a $10 fee, it's better than finding your checkbook, writing a check, looking for an envelope, grabbing a stamp, putting it in the mail. So wiring, checking, I don't think you cannot submit cash as your deposit.
What about money orders? I feel like you can do a money order.
I've seen Western Union.
Yeah.
It's come over as deposits when sometimes people don't have bank accounts. Be fearful.
But those funds also have to be verified too. So a lot of times
financing.
Yeah. The loan officer will want to see that $10,000 coming out of your account. Yeah. If you're financing. If it's a cash deal, then no, they're not verifying it. But.
So typically a personal check written out to the escrow agent, typically the listing brokerage, for the amount that was agreed upon in signing of the contract. And then as the person writing the check, make sure you put in the memo section of the check, deposit for 123 Main Street. And then if you're financing, the bank's going to need a copy of the check. Your lawyers are going to want a copy of the check, and your listing company will want, and the brokerage will want a copy of that check as well. So if you are writing the check, take a picture, send it to your agent. But your agent's going to tell you, you know, when to write that check, who to send it to, how to distribute it. And then it comes back to you at closing if you're the buyer. So on your closing statement, which we'll talk about next episode, you're going to see credits to purchaser. And if that deposit was 10 grand, you're going to see a 10 grand credit to you as the purchaser. And that's 10 grand less you have to bring of the total amount to close on that house. Does that make sense?
I think what I've seen most of the time is that the buyer isn't necessarily responsible for sending it to every single person and writing all these emails, especially if they're working with an agent.
Yeah.
So they send it to the agent, transaction coordinator, whoever's working on the deal.
They'll distribute.
And then they make sure everyone gets it, which is another benefit of working with an agent. You know, you got one person that you can go to whenever you have a question.
We're going to send your emails for you.
Right, yeah. And then they can, you know, if it's an attorney question, they can tell you to talk to that person or connect you in whatever way you need to. But it's nice to have that one person to go to.
Yeah.
Next contingency in the contract, once you submit the deposit check, is applying for your loan, which is also a section in the contract. If you've bought a house and you don't know this, you know, make sure you know what you're signing before you sign things. But you'll have up to 5 days to actually apply for your loan. So we talked about the pre-approval in the second or third episode, but this is now where it's the formal loan application process, where you're going to be working with the underwriting department at the bank to get them all of the documents that they need to make a decision from the bank's perspective is, do we want to go into business with this person? Do we want to finance this house for them? And that comes down to your employment, your credit, your debt to income ratio, how much cash you have, how much money you show on the books. And you have to verify and validate all of that stuff through the process through your loan application. So when you're thinking about like the lending side of things, you have your loan originator who's going to help you with your pre-approvals and your pre-qualifications. And then when you physically apply for your loan, you're going to be working with the bank's underwriting department. And once underwriting is done, you get passed to the closing department, who then sets up the deal to actually close.
I get a question sometimes from clients, why not apply for the loan earlier? Why am I waiting until after all this? You know, I've already signed the contract. Like, wouldn't the bank want to know before I'm actually applying? They're just going on my pre-approval. Like, what is the reason for waiting to do this?
Because the loan is on the asset. So the loan is secured by the mortgage on the asset. So if you don't have the asset determined, you can't apply for the loan because the bank's not going to know what property they're tying the mortgage to.
Okay, so it's important to at least get the pre-approval and then find the house, go under contract, make sure, yes, this is the one I'm buying. You've already done the inspection. And now the bank can say, okay, this is the one. Let's see if we can finance this.
Yeah, because even after inspection, like that price can go down or whatever, you know? So they want to know exactly what number you're asking for. So everything is on the straight and path.
Okay.
But so, the house is the mortgaged instrument, right?
Yeah.
That they're attaching that loan to.
And like you said, they're going to want your income, employment history, your credit score, any other financial information, you know, how much money you have in the bank.
Yeah. They're going through your bank statements. They're going to want to see, like, is this person going to the casino every Friday, Saturday night withdrawing $500 four or five different times? Like, that's going to show up in this process, and that could, an underwriter can make a decision, hey, we don't think you could afford this house and we're not qualifying you. So once you apply for the loan, the next thing you're looking for is that mortgage commitment letter, which is the bank committing to giving purchaser the mortgage to buy the asset. So that's a very important date in the contract. And it's super important because if you're a buyer and you're purchasing this home and you're beyond that mortgage commitment date that's identified in the contract, the seller can cancel the deal on you. So make sure, like, when you go under contract to buy a house, like, you put that appointment in your phone that with a couple day reminder that you need your mortgage commitment letter by July 15th, because the seller can cancel on you if you don't produce that commitment letter before that date in the contract.
And a lot of people are looking at that date, the seller, the seller's agent, the seller's attorney. They're making sure that this deal is running on track. So everybody's looking at that date. If you need some more time, then you need to get an addendum signed, explain why you need additional time to reach that mortgage commitment date. So people are watching that date.
And when you think about those phases, right? Like the first person, the loan originator, they produce the pre-approvals. The underwriting department, that second group of people from the bank, they produce the mortgage commitment. That third group, the people that work in the closing department at the bank, they produce the loan disclosures, which is the repayment of the loan and all of the terms associated with borrowing the money from the bank. So the underwriters produce the commitment, the closing department's going to produce the closing disclosures, and once all that's said and done, then the bank will give you the green light to close the deal.
To give you the green,
to get the keys.
Wow. Is there anything else? I think we covered it pretty well as far as an overview.
Yeah.
Paying for the appraisals part of the loan app. So buyer is going to give the banker their information, credit card or debit card or whatever, to pay for the appraisal. That's part of the loan application.
It's normally process. A few hundred dollars.
Like 500 or, plus, yeah. Depending okay. on the size of the house, type of home.
Right. It makes sense. The bank wants to, you know, protect themselves. They want to make sure that you have the money, that the house is worth what you're paying for it, and
that it's in a condition suitable so that, like, if to make sure that the house doesn't need a roof in the next year, and then the buyer now has to put a roof on the house to save the integrity of the asset, that the bank actually is yeah. the one that owns majority of that house.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going there to make sure the house is worth what the buyer is willing to pay based on homes that have sold nearby, and that it's also in a condition that's satisfactory to the bank should the purchaser have to make A, B, C improvements and still be able to make those improvements and pay their monthly payment.
Yeah. Oh, and I mean, if you want to pay $300,000 for a house that a bank deems to be worth $250,000, you can still buy the house. You just can't finance the whole amount. You finance what the bank says it's worth. And if you have the extra finances to pay the difference, then that's how you do it, right? I mean,
yep.
The bank's only going to lend you what they think the house is worth.
Or a seller can agree to sell it for less money because sure. the bank said it's only worth $250,000 in that circumstance. But it's another negotiation point that, you know, doesn't come up all the time. Like, only but it does come up sometimes.
It's been coming up more and more, especially the last couple of years.
As the bank tightens.
Yeah. As negotiating deals, as people are overbidding on houses. Like, that was a big part of my negotiation when I'm looking at offers is, we know this thing might not appraise for $300,000. Who's willing to make up that difference? Who's willing to write that on paper stating you will make that up in cash at the closing table? So that's a big part of it.
Yeah, and that's just a good agent, like, knowing what yeah. a house is worth in the area that they're selling it and making sure that their seller is protected or their buyer isn't going to be blindsided mm-hmm. thinking, oh, we bought the house for $300,000. Oh, wait, what? We need to come up with $20,000? So to work that out beforehand and to have some foresight there is really important.
Yeah, know those comps when writing those offers of what the most the bank is going to say this house is possibly worth. Mm-hmm. And we know how banks appraise properties. Mm-hmm. That's part of our pricing strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we go to price a house, we know the most the bank's going to say it's worth. And then you negotiate the best possible deal, no matter depending on which side you're on.
Well, Ryan, I really appreciate you coming on. It wasn't even really planned.
Yeah,
we just
for
knew that
me.
you were the guy to talk to about this and you were available. So thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Up next, closing on said asset.
Wow. The last step in the process.
Wow.
Time to get the keys.
Yep. All right. See you next time.
Thanks for listening.